Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 142. I'm recording it on Friday, June 12th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of this selection is Nothing Broken. The title of the podcast is Dollar Cost Averaging is a loser idea. You don't want to be investing your money according to some loser idea. Not if you're a passionsaving.com sort of person. I have hopes. Friends and neighbors will see whether I live up to these hopes, but I have hopes of wrapping this one up in under 60 minutes. I think you have to go back to something like podcast 4 to get to one where I pulled it in at under 60 minutes. I've been coming in at 73 minutes, 77 minutes. And this one, I have a couple big incentives. One, I've got two boys who want me to take them to the pool at 6 o'clock when the rates go down. And they're going to be counting on me. It's 10 minutes of 5. And if I don't get this wrapped up in under 60 minutes, I'm not going to have time to put my swimsuit on and get in the car and get them to the pool by 6 o'clock. So these two guys are not going to be happy with old Farmer Hocus if this one comes in at 77 minutes. And two, I don't think this one really has to be that long. It's an interesting topic. It's a topic that needs to be addressed very much, I believe, but it's fairly simple. So it shouldn't take 92 minutes to finish this one. I've actually never gone 92 minutes. I do have some limits on my... I do put some restraints on myself. But third, these podcasts are just too darn long. And it's hot. It's summertime. It's hot. And I can't be doing these 70 and 80 minute podcasts anymore. I'm getting old. All right. Dollar cost averaging is a loser idea. This came up when I was at church this week. There was a man, Kevin, a friend of mine, and he came up to me and we were talking about investing things, and he wanted to look at the website, and I gave him the address of the website, and I said, basically, Kevin, I said, please look at the website. I said, but let me tell you, it's really so simple. I said, the advice I give on investing is controversial. It's very, very controversial. And I said, it's so controversial. It's like telling people, try, you know, what was that name of that famous book on cars? Don't get taken every time. Remember? On going to the car dealer lot, don't get taken every time. That's what I should call my book, Don't Get Taken Every Time Buying Stocks. That's all I do. I just tell people how to not get taken. And the key to not get taken buying stocks is you got to look at the price. That's it. It's not complicated. The biggest problem I have, the reason why there are 142 Robcast instead of 2, which is what there should be, is that nobody believes me about how simple it is. Everybody thinks there's got to be a catch. Rob, it can't be that easy. Are you telling us? We're all middle-class investors. We all look at the price of everything we buy. We look at the price of bananas and comic books and cars and houses. And you're telling us if we would just consider the price of stocks, we wouldn't be losing all our retirement money. We wouldn't have to start all over. We wouldn't be having such a panic. The economy wouldn't be crashing all around us. And my answer is yep, 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 yep. Yep. That's it. We've got to pay attention to price. That's it. Buy stocks. Buy lots of stocks when the long-term value proposition is wonderful. Buy a reasonable amount of stocks when the long-term value proposition is reasonably good. And don't buy too many stocks when the long-term value proposition is very, very, very poor. That's the controversial advice. Why is it so controversial? Because it's directly contrary to everything that, guess who? The stock selling industry tells you. We get most of our investing advice from people who make money selling us stocks. Well, do I have to explain why maybe that's not such a hot idea? Maybe they're just a tiny bit compromised? Okay. So I was telling Kevin, this is the deal. Pay attention to, please look at the, listen to the podcast, read the articles, play with the calculators. But Kevin, if you want to save yourself some time and trouble, pay attention to the price of the stocks you buy, and you're going to do better than 90% of the other investors out there, including some of the biggest name experts, people like John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and Jonathan Clements and Scott Burns. You're miles ahead of them. If you look at price, because they can't do that because they're passive investors. They go by the academic research. They can't look at price. They've got to buy stocks no matter what the price, which means they have to buy them when going with a heavy stock allocation is gonna mean bone crushing losses. You can go ahead of all that. You can sail ahead of all that. So I said this to Kevin, and he says, yeah, I know what you mean. I heard about that. A dollar cost averaging, right? That way, you buy stocks every month, and that way, well, when the price is low, you're buying more because they're cheaper, so you're buying more shares. And then when the price is high, you're buying not so many, so you're sort of not buying a lot of shares when the price is high, so you're paying attention to price, so it's good. And my head exploded. And I said, Kevin, my friend, I've played poker with Kevin. He's a better poker player than me. So I know he's a smart guy. He's capable of better. He's capable of better. No, 1,000 times no. Dollar cost averaging is a trick. That's the word we use for it in, among us investing professionals, the experts. You have to be in the club. In the vernacular, it's called a loser idea. Same basic concept. Dollar cost averaging is a loser idea. Please. Stop falling for these tricks, these marketing gimmicks. Oh, I'll explain. They're taking advantage of us. Okay? We all know that price matters. And so the job of any industry is to get you to buy its product, okay? The milk industry wants you to buy lots of milk. So what is it they say? I forget what it was. What was it? They had that big slogan, got milk, right? Who even knows what that means, got milk? But, they say it 10 billion times and we end up buying more milk. And people will deny it, but if we didn't buy more milk, they wouldn't spend $100 kajillion telling us to do it. It works. Well, the stock selling industry wants you to buy stocks. And of course, it's easy to get you to buy stocks when they're priced well. They want you to get to buy stocks when they're overpriced. How do they do that? Trickery, or it's called marketing, if you want to be kind. But we need to see through that marketing. We've got to stop being such fools, such saps. Guy's smart enough to beat me in poker consistently. He's smart enough to know how to buy stocks. So, I dedicate this one to Kevin, and I'm going to tell you why dollar cost averaging is a loser idea. There have been three eras in stock investing history. There's the pre-Bogle era, where the idea was to beat the market through short-term timing, to figure out where the market was going and try to buy stocks at the right time and sell at the right time. And that doesn't work. Bogle looked at the academic research, which shows that it doesn't work, and he built his investing philosophy around that idea. His investing philosophy is called passive investing. It is the dominant model of today by far. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to big price changes. The second era was the passive investing era, launched by, you know, John Bogle launched it in the sense of setting up a mutual fund company. It was launched by Eugene Fama, you know, if you want to look at it academically. He developed the efficient market theory. And the third age of investing is in its very early years. My view is that it began on May 13th, 2002, when the retire early and indexing discussion board communities began discussing the flaws in the passive investing model. And we found that it's not true that timing never works. What the academic, there, it's true that there's research showing that short-term timing doesn't work. Changing your allocation, thinking that you're going to see a benefit within 6 months or a year, does not work. However, the same historical data that shows that short-term timing never works shows that long-term timing always works. Long-term timing is changing your allocation with the understanding that you may not see a benefit for doing so for several years. Could be 3 years, could be 5 years, could be as much as 10 years. Short-term timing never works. Long-term timing always works. So it's every bit as accurate to say timing always works as it is to say timing never works. The pre-Bogle era was short-term timing works. Bogle replaced that with the passive investing era that says timing never works. And the rational model says short-term timing never works. Long-term timing always works. So just as much as we want to advocate people not engage in short-term timing, we want to encourage people to always engage in long-term timing. If you don't engage in long-term timing, you're throwing your money down the sewer. You just don't know what you're doing. And we're in the early stages of development of this model. There's a number of us, hundreds of us, that have helped in the first 7 years, but we need to get thousands involved, millions, you know, hundreds of thousands if we can. You know, we want to take this a long ways. So we don't have a finished product, but I'll speak for myself. I'm highly confident that valuations affect long-term returns. And if you check around the website, I think you'll see that there are many, many smart people who agree. And the historical data shows that to be so. So we're now, the problem is, all the ideas of the passive model are rooted in a fallacy. The fallacy is that timing doesn't work. It's not true. Timing always works. And we've known this, I mean, you know, I have to put the word "no" in quotes. We've known this since 1981. Robert Shiller did research in 1981 showing that timing works. The valuations affect long-term returns. You know, Vanguard started promoting passive investing in the late 70s. That's when Vanguard was founded. So there have already been millions of dollars devoted to marketing the idea that timing doesn't work. So they had a decision to make. I wasn't around. I wasn't in the room when they made this decision. But somebody made a decision to continue saying the timing doesn't work, even though research was showing that it does. Now, the research wasn't so clear then. It was one study, and there were probably some people who thought, you know, I'm absolutely convinced there are people who thought timing does not work. That nothing could be more clear. So I think people were sort of shocked. And they saw the study and they thought, well, that's weird, but, you know, we'll have to do some more studies, see how it checks out. And over time, more studies were done. And now there have been lots of studies done showing long-term timing works. But the trouble is, as those studies were being done through the 80s and 90s, and the record was getting stronger and stronger and stronger, the bull market was charging forward and people were falling more and more in love with the passive investing model. So by the time we had a rock solid case, let's say the mid 90s, when Shiller was testifying to the Federal Reserve about irrational exuberance, by that time, a lot of people didn't want to hear that passive investing didn't work. They're saying, what? It doesn't work. Sure works for me, bud. I don't need to hear any new data. Works for me. Well, rational investing would have worked from 1975 through 1995. Stocks offered a tremendous value proposition in all those years. So you didn't have to worry about valuations. The valuations were good. It's only in 96 that the valuations went to insanely dangerous levels. And from 96 forward, passive investing has been a disaster, just as the historical data shows it should have been. Just as people like Robert Shiller were able to predict. Shiller predicted in his 1996 testimony that investing heavily in stocks, ignoring price, was going to be a disaster for those who followed this crazy mixed up model. And it was. And it's becoming more of a disaster every day. We've got to get the word out. All right, all that is preface. Now, the thing that set me off is that Kevin is, and all people following following dollar cost averaging, they're trying to take that. They understand that valuations must matter. This is common sense. It's impossible for any rational human being to think that valuations wouldn't affect stock returns. It's not even possible for the rational human mind to imagine a scenario where that could be so. So Kevin is saying, yeah, you know, I said to him, Kevin, valuations, you got to look at valuations. He says, yeah, I get that, Rob. He says, dollar cost averaging, right? I'm buying more shares when the price is low, not so many when the price is high. I'm covered, right? I'm doing the right thing. No, 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 no. That is short-term thinking. Now, Kevin is properly saying what the advocates of dollar cost averaging preach. He's properly, you know, repeating the marketing slogan. But the marketing slogan, the marketing gimmick, whatever you want to call it, it's all backwards. The problem is this dollar cost averaging approach is a short-term approach. There's two kinds of price changes. There are price changes that happen in the short term. The short term is anything less than 10 years. The long term is anything more than 10 years. Short-term price changes don't mean diddly squat. Just ignore them. Bogle's right about that. Bogle is hero of the first rank on that one because nobody has preached that more than John Bogle, and the man is right on the spot. I think a big part of his appeal is that he tells people, ignore the BS. He doesn't say it that way. Not quite as earthy as Farmer Hocus. But he laughs when they talk about the short term. I've seen him laugh. And God bless him. He's right. It is to laugh. Sometimes you gotta laugh. I don't think we should laugh in ridicule, but we have to laugh sometimes so we don't cry. Short term price changes don't mean a thing. They don't mean a gosh darn thing. Ignore them. So this idea that you're somehow doing something good by, you get to purchase more shares when the short-term price is low than you do when the short-term price is high, who the heck cares? You're looking at the part of the project that is meaningless. You're looking at the nonsense, and you're ignoring the big stuff. You're ignoring the stuff that really matters. What really matters? What matters is the long term. So you don't want to care. You just don't care whether the short term's gone up or down. What you want to know is the price that applies when I buy the stock a price that is going to give me a strong long-term value proposition or not? Okay? And that is something that doesn't change month to month, or even sometimes year to year. That's something that changes decade by decade. So you have to take a long-term focus. And this is what the stock selling industry doesn't want you to do. I want you to do it. Bogle sort of kind of wants you to do it, but he can't. I don't know. I don't think he's quite able to understand what's involved in taking a long-term, taking a truly long-term approach. He gets halfway there, and then he freezes, and he can't quite get over the line. My objective is to take Bogle's approach and get it over the line. I don't want it to be a mix of short-term thinking and long-term thinking, and that's the most dangerous combination of all. That's a disaster. I want to make Bogle's advice truly long-term investing advice. So, I don't want you thinking about, if I buy some stocks in January of 2009 and the price is such and such, and then if the price is higher in July of 2009, well, I won't be buying quite as many shares. And then if the price is lower in July of 2010, I'll be buying even more shares. No, just forget about what happens in January of 2009 and July of 2009 and July of 2010. That's all short term. Forget it. You are forbidden, children, to look at those numbers. The reason you have to stop looking at the short-term numbers is you've only got so many brain cells, and those brain cells need to be focused on what matters, and what matters is the long-term. You can go to my website, or you can go to John Walter Russell's website. John Walter Russell is the brains behind the operation. I'm the mouth. He's the brains. So if you want the mouth, you're in the right place. If you want the brains, you got to go to John's site. I'm the mouth, so I sometimes talk quicker than I think, and I forget the name. early-retirement-planning-insights.com. The brains of the Retire Early Indexing Movement. Go there. He has the stock return predictor, and you can go to passionsaving.com if Flash is what entices you. Can go there. You can get the flash side of the operation. I come up with the clever names for the calculators. He does all the work. He does all the numbers work. And I come up with these jazzy names. And we say that we're co-creators. I've been working that sort of scam since my early days. I will tell you, friends and neighbors. I always remember this. It makes me laugh. I may have told this story. I don't know. But it just shows how bad I am. But my brother Steven was 3 years younger than me, and when we used to go out Halloween, you know, we'd collect bags of candy, and I would eat mine all up, you know, and he would pace himself, you know. And after mine was all gone, I'd say, "Well, Steve, you got to share. We're brothers, aren't we? You got to share." I still remember. All right. What's the story here? So, you got to look long-term. Now, these little jigger-jagger movements in the short-term don't mean a thing. They don't mean a thing. So, dollar-cost averaging is protecting you, quote-unquote, from the jigger-jagger short-term stuff, which is meaningless, and doing nothing to protect you. You know, it's protecting you from these little jellyfish that maybe would sting your leg a little bit, and it's leaving you exposed to the man-eating sharks of long-term valuation changes, which are what really matter. So I'm going to go through. I hope this will persuade you. Persuades me, tell you that much. I went back to make my point. I went back and looked at the P10 levels that applied from 1996 through 2008. Now, for purposes of dollar cost averaging, you need to look at the P10 levels of every month. But I only looked at January. But if you looked at all the other months, they'd be the same. You know, they were always, the lowest one I have here for January is January 2003, a P10 level of 23. The highest is 44 in January of 2000. Now, a P10 level of 14 is fair value. P10 level of 20 is dangerous. P10 level of 25 is insane. So we were at the insane level for every year except 2003. And 2003, we were on the threshold of insane. We were in the dangerous, almost insane. So the point here is, how many months? Say from 96 through 2008, that's 12 years, 12 months a year, 144 months. So dollar cost averaging is telling you what to do in each month for 144 months. And for those entire 144 months, you should have been going with a low stock allocation, maybe 20%. But the dollar cost averaging people aren't telling you to go with 20%. They're telling you to go with 70%, something like that. So they're 50 percentage points off the mark. 50 percentage points off the mark. Every month for 144 months in a row. Now do you understand why I say dollar cost averaging is a loser idea? They're off the mark by 50 percentage points of stock allocation for 144 months in a row. God help us all. So I'm going to just, you know, you can check it. If you don't believe me, you can go to Robert Shiller's website, and that's where I pulled the data from. So this isn't my data. Robert Shiller's a Yale professor, author of Irrational Exuberance. He's testified to Congress. He's testified to the Federal Reserve. I think the guy knows what he's doing. I'm just going to read you. Now, I'll read you three numbers. The year, and then three numbers. I'm going to go from 96 through 2008. First number I'm going to read you is the P10 level. PE10 is the price of stocks. That's all. It's the price tag of stocks. And if you get a price tag of 14, you're doing good. That's fair value. Stocks offer a great long-term value proposition at 14. At 20, they're dangerous. But, you know, not insane, but dangerous. At 25, they're flat out insane. Bad stocks. Bad. Every one of these numbers is going to be above 20. Some of them way above 20. To give you an idea, the month before the greatest stock crash in history, the stock crash that caused the Great Depression, the month before that we were 33. January 2000 we went to 44. So I'll read the P10 level, and then I'll tell you the most likely long-term return for that P10 level. So I'll be reading that, and I pulled that number from the stock return predictor, a calculator developed by John Walter Russell and myself, and it uses a regression analysis. That's, you know, talk to the statisticians if you want to know what that is. It uses a regression analysis on the historical stock return data to tell us the most likely return on stocks 10 years out. So it's not telling you how stocks are going to do next month or next year. I can't tell you. I don't know. Stop talking about it. Stop asking me. People, you know, 99 out of 100 people who talk to me ask me, what are stocks going to do this year? And the answer is always, I have no clue whatsoever. And I wish that they would ask me, how are stocks going to do 10 years from now? Because that I can tell you. And that's what matters. So I'll give you the most likely 10-year return, the most likely long-term return from that PE10 level, because it changes. At a good PE10 level, the most likely 10-year return is 14% a year. The numbers I'll be giving you are annualized real returns. That means how much you get every year, you know, plus inflation. Real returns. So at great PE10 levels, your most likely 10-year return is 14% annualized for 10 years. At poor valuations, it's a negative number. You're likely to get a negative return. You could do better in a money market account. All right. I gotta remember those boys. I gotta keep going here. Gotta stop the jibber jabber. All right. 96, January 96. P10 level, 25. Insane. Don't want to be dollar cost averaging that year, do you? Most likely 10-year return, an annualized real return of 1.55. Now, the last number I'm going to read you is the return that you would have to get on a risk-free asset class for that asset class to be a better deal than stocks. I perform a very, very simple. Whenever Rob Bennett performs a mathematical calculation, you know it's simple, because otherwise I wouldn't take the chance on doing it. I'd ask John. But this one was so simple, I thought I could handle it. I subtracted 2 points from the most likely return. Why did I subtract 2 points? Because stocks are a dangerous asset class. They're a volatile asset class. They're an anxiety-provoking asset class. If you have a choice between investing in stocks, where you're going to earn 2% a year, and investing in a money market or a CD or a I-bond or TIPS, and you're going to get 2% a year, I'd say go with the TIPS or the I-bond or the CD, because why should you take on all the risk of stocks and not get compensated for it? My view is you should get compensated at least, minimum, bare minimum, 2 percentage points of return a year, or else forget stocks. You don't need them. So what I do is I look at the most likely return on stocks, and then I say, well, if I could get a return on TIPS or I-bonds or money markets or CDs of 2 percentage points less, I would go with the CD or the I-bond. That's the number I need to get, is 2 points, within 2 points. And if I'm within 2 points, I favor them. And if the difference in stocks is more than 2 points, which it certainly is at fair value, stocks beat those things by, say, 4 points. 4 points real. Or five. If they beat it by 5 points, I'm going with stocks, you know. That's how you get rich. That's how you get financial freedom. So if stocks can beat the safe asset classes by 4 or 5 percentage points, I'm in stocks. But if they can only beat it by 2 points, I think it's a close call. And if they beat it by less than 2 points, I'm out. Now, so those are the numbers I'm going to read you. 96, P10 levels 25, insane price. Most likely 10-year return, 1.55. The return you'd have to get on I-bonds to beat it, a negative 0.45. You think you could have got that? You think you could have found a money market account that was paying an annual return of a negative 0.45? Yep. I bet you could have. 1997. P10 level was 28. Insane. Most likely 10-year return. 0.89. Less than 1%. Likely return. Return you'd have to get in a super safe asset class to beat stocks or to be equivalent to stocks. Negative 1.1. Think you could have found a CD somewhere that would have, a certificate of deposit somewhere that would have paid an annual return for 10 years of a negative 1.1%? Yeah, probably so. 1998, P10 level, 33. Insane. Most likely 10-year return, 0.07. 0.07. Most likely 10-year return on stocks at that price. What price would you have to get from a money market account to do as well as you could have done in stocks after adjusting for the volatility factor? Negative 2.0. Do you think you could have found a money market account in 1998 paying a negative 2.0 a year for 10 years? I bet you could have. 1999, P10 level 41. Most likely return, negative 0.83. What you'd have to get in a money market account to make it worth, to make it worth going with the money market account rather than stocks, negative 2.2. Negative 2.2. I think there are some places where if they offered a certificate of deposit paying a negative 2.2 for 10 years, they'd put them in jail. But the stock market, they didn't put anybody in the stock market in jail for these sort of returns. January of 2000, P10 level 44. I don't even want to call that one insane. That's just scary. Most likely 10-year return on stocks, negative 1.09. Return you'd have to get on a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks and putting it in the super safe asset class, negative 3.0. Negative 3.0. 2001, P10 level. 37. Likely 10-year return on stocks? 0.43. Return you'd have to get on a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks? Negative 1.6. 2002, P10 level 30. Most likely 10-year return? 0.53. Return you'd have to get on a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks? Negative 1.5. 2003, P10 level 23. This is the best it ever got in this 12-year span. Most likely 10-year return, 2.08. Oh, stock's getting pretty attractive. Most likely return, 2.08. Return you'd have to have on a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks, 0%. 2004, Pete's end level, 28. Insane again. Back to insane. We were slightly below insane for a few months there. Most likely 10-year return, 0.89. Return you'd have to get in a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks, negative 1.1. 2005, P10 level, 27, insane. Most likely 10-year return, 1.1. Positive return. Return you'd have to get in a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks, negative 0.9%. 2006, you get the idea. 2006, P10 level, 27. Most likely return, 10 years, 1.1. Return you'd have to get in a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks, negative 0.9. Same numbers applied in 2007. 2008, slightly better. P10 level is 24. Most likely 10-year return, 1.80. Return you'd have to get in a super safe asset class to make it worth taking your money out of stocks, a negative 0.2%. So for the entire time period, 144 months, from 1996 through 2008, all you had to do to beat stocks or to have an equivalent value proposition of stocks after considering the volatility, after subtracting 2 points for the volatility factor, the risk factor, that at the worst year, the best year for stocks, 2003, all you needed to get from a super safe asset class was a zero return. If you could have gotten anything better than zero for the entire 12 years, you were better in something other than stocks. Okay? So dollar cost averaging didn't help you one darn bit. Dollar cost averaging had you in stocks the entire 144 months. It had you in a loser investment class the entire 144 months. This is what we're trying to change. We're trying to get people, the whole idea, the reason I call it rational investing is we're trying to get people to look at prices. It's irrational not to look at prices. Passive investing says don't look at price. It says stay at the same stock allocation regardless of price. And it's all a trick. I don't say intentional, but it's all a trick. It's a trick. Because the argument for not looking at prices is that prices in the short term are not predictable. And it's true. Short term, the price in the short term doesn't tell you how well stocks are going to do. But in the long term, it sure does. In the long term, it's the most important factor you could possibly look at. It's the key to long-term success is looking at price. And dollar cost averaging means not doing that. It's a loser idea. It's a loser idea. Now, that's really the case. So I don't know that the problem with dollar cost averaging, it's giving you a false sense of security. You feel that you're acting prudently, you're really investing recklessly, and you end up delaying your retirement by many years. But you never even know it because you never check the numbers. Dollar cost, when they tell you to dollar cost average, they don't say check the numbers each month you invest, do they? They just say do it. See, all passive investing is, the very word passive gives the game away. The thing they're passive about is their stock allocation. So what they're drumming into your head is ignore price. Just passively choose. Even the passive investors will acknowledge. I saw this on a blog today where a guy promotes passive investing, a free money finance, I think it's called. And he said, a lot of these experts will tell you 90% of success in investing is getting the allocation right. And I think that's pretty much correct. 90% sounds awful big, but that's the factor that you control. You don't control anything else other than your allocation. Well, you can't get your allocation right if you're not looking at the price, can you? So passive can't work. There are time periods where it can work. From 75 to 95, it was gangbusters. Because from 75 to 95, the long-term value proposition of stocks was gangbusters. So you couldn't go wrong. But that's not going to last forever. And as soon as it stops being gangbusters and you don't change your allocation, you're going to lose a large percentage of the money you made during the gangbuster years. For what purpose? So you've got to look at price. Got to look at price. And don't be fooled into thinking what matters is the effect of price in the short term. Dollar cost averaging might protect you from that, but that has nothing to do with what you need. What you need is to look at the long-term value proposition. So in a 12-year time period, when stocks prices are insane and they offer a bad value proposition for 144 months in a row, you don't want to be going with stocks. You don't. Now, the last thing I'll just point out, it's not strictly on dollar cost averaging, but it's related, because the point here is dollar cost averaging, it disturbs me. It bothers me that somebody as intelligent as Kevin, as intelligent as you, was taken in by this idea. And I've come to refer to these ideas as marketing slogans. That's what they are. They're marketing slogans, but there's really nothing wrong with marketing. I was reading an article the other day, one of my favorite articles on investing by Cliff S. Ness, Bubble Logic. And he was talking about how, you know, it's hardly surprising that the stock selling industry tries to trick us into overinvesting in stocks at times of insane prices. That's the business they're in. So he made the point. You can hardly blame them. And I thought that was a good point. But there is a part that I blame, and you know, we sort of have to blame ourselves too. The blame is pretty wide on this one, but the problem is car dealers are trying to trick us. You know, I mean, trick is a sort of a harsh word, but maybe I shouldn't use the word trick. But they're trying to persuade us, and we all know it, and we go in there with our guard up, and we also know a thing or two about cars. So when they feed us some BS line, we're not going to buy into it that easy. And some people are taken with cars. But most of us know to be cautious and to, you know, maybe check consumer reports or bring our friend along who understands cars. And most of us are not taken too horribly. But it was stocks. Most of us are intimidated by the experts. And we don't understand all these numbers. And so we bow down before them. But all the people that are called experts, most of them are just in the stock selling industry. They make their money selling stocks. They're hardly an unbiased source of information. This is a problem. So they're fear. And the thing that really does bother me is that, you know, the salesman pitch that a car dealer gives you. Oh, you know, you're smart. You're obviously on top of things, you know. Oh, you're very, you know, I could see right away, you know, when you walked in the lot, you know, all this BS. You know, that's obvious BS. And if you can't see through it, there's something wrong with you. But that's not true of the BS. The stock selling, they're talking about academic studies. They make it sound like these people are off, you know, they're neutral. They're neutral. Well, guess what? There's academic studies for 28 years showing that valuations affect long-term returns. But they don't talk about those academic studies. And as a matter of fact, if you go to one of these discussion boards, the really big ones, where they get the big-time experts to participate, bogleheads.org, Vanguard, diehards, they'll ban you if you even mention these studies. Mike Relepsis, I learned about a lot of these studies because he used to quote them all the time. They banned the guy. Can't be mentioned as they say, oh, what's different about your approach? Well, we follow studies, we're academic. Yeah, but if you mention the studies that show that they're talking BS, you get banned. So they're, you know, these are fronts. That I find offensive, deeply offensive, deeply offensive. I didn't know this starting out, but I've grown more and more to find this offensive. This game. So things like dollar cost averaging, I think the people who cooked it up probably, I think they believe it to some extent. Because I don't think, see, I have to be careful. I think a lot of this is marketing BS. But I also think a lot of the people pushing it really do believe in passive investing. See, it's a funny thing. They do believe it. There was evidence that it worked at one time. I mean, there's still evidence, but there was strong evidence, and I think the case is weak today, but at one time, the case was strong. You know, the studies I'm talking about only came out in 1981, and as I say, there was only one in 1981, so it wasn't, you know, it had to be tested. So these people believed it. And once they, you know, and I think they want to help people. You know, I think car dealers want to help people. All of us, you know, unless you're a psycho, you do your job and you have to sell, and we all understand that. But you also want to help people. You want to think that the thing you're selling them is going to do them some good. And I think that's how most of these people are. And so they persuade themselves. They say, oh yeah, dollar cost averaging, that's really good. They persuade themselves. And then once their name gets on it, they don't want to admit it's wrong. That's the killer. And so many people are behind it now that it's, you know, you can show them that they're wrong and they don't want to hear it. They tune it out. And if they tune it out, they never learn. They never learn just how bad it is. A lot of people will acknowledge today that the efficient market theory doesn't stand up to scrutiny. Lots of people. Lots of passive investing advocates will do that. But they don't acknowledge the consequences. They say, well, dollar cost averaging, that really doesn't hold up. But then they'll say, oh, but passive invest, that's what matters, passive. Well, passive investing, the only reason anybody invests passively is because of the efficient market theory. It makes no sense to invest passively if it hadn't been for the efficient market theory. But now they're kicking out the theoretical justification and saying, I'm going to stick with the strategy. Well, that's cognitive dissonance. They're just saying, look, I can't give up this strategy. I've advocated it for years now. I can't turn my back on it now, even if it has no theoretical justification. I've got to pretend. So that's where we're at now. We're in a transition. And we need to work it. We need to be kind. We need to be charitable. But we need to be a bit firm. Because these people have... They're in a lot of pain, and they will play so many games to avoid looking at the reality. So, you know, I'm making the case in this podcast that dollar cost averaging is a loser idea. And what I'm really saying is it's a marketing pitch. We're all marketing pitches, you know, they aim to solve a problem. That's what they're doing. But they want to solve the problem in a way that leads you to the action that they want to persuade you to commit. And the action is they want you to buy lots of stocks. You know, that's the action. So dollar cost averaging is a way of addressing our concern about buying overpriced stocks. We all have that fear, and that's a healthy fear. You know, 100% is just, you know, middle class good sense. And they're trying to work around that. They're saying, what do we tell people? What do we tell people when they say, well, the price is awful high? What are we going to tell people? Oh, here it is. We'll tell them. If you buy a little bit each month, you don't have to worry about the price because you'll be buying more shares when the price is low and not so many when it's high. And if you don't think about it, and if you don't check the numbers like I just did, and if you don't look at the academic research showing that short-term timing never works and that long-term timing always works, that sounds plausible. You're taken in by it. And because most of us don't really care that much about investing, we're happy to leave it to these experts to tell us. But they're compromised. They're trying to sell stocks, so they're not telling the straight story. So I just want to go quickly through some other cases where something similar happens. They're all of these famous gimmicks and sayings are marketing slogans. Dollar cost averaging is a marketing slogan because it pretends to protect you from price changes, but it's only dealing with short-term changes, which don't make any difference. And the long-term changes, which is the man-eating shark in the story, it just provides no help at all. So you end up investing in a poor asset class for 144 months running, even though you're following the dollar cost averaging strategy. Timing never works. Another marketing slogan. Is it true? You know, is dollar cost averaging true? It's true in a way. I mean, you know, if you buy, you know, if the price changes from January to July and the price goes in half, it's true that you get twice as many shares for the same amount of money. You know, technically what they're saying is true. It's just not a good strategy because it ignores the long-term value proposition. Timing never works. Is it true? Well, I think there's a lot of evidence that short-term timing never works, so it's not false. But there's just as much evidence that long-term timing always works, so it is false. You know, which is it? You know, how can you say whether a marketing slogan is true or false? You know, Donut King, you know? You're walking down the street and you see a place called Donut King. Are they really the Donut King? What's it even mean to be a Donut King? It doesn't mean anything. You know, Pepsi, the taste that satisfies. Does it satisfy? Does Pepsi satisfy? I guess it satisfies some people. In some circumstances, it satisfies. Other people are satisfied by other things. Some people are satisfied by Gatorade or orange juice or, you know. How can you prove or disprove a marketing slogan? There's no substance to it. We've got to stop taking investing advice from people who are trying to sell us something. Stocks for the long run. True, false? Well, it's true in the sense that stock returns are more predictable in the long term than they are in the short term. That's a key insight, and it's true. It's false in that the suggestion is you want to go with stocks for the long, in other words, you want to always be invested in stocks because they're always going to do well in the long term. No, 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 1,000 times no. At the prices stocks were selling at from 96 through 2008, stocks were a horrible investment for the long term. So the way it should be said is, stocks are great for the long term at some prices. Stocks are horrible for the long term at other prices. The long term does matter. That is what matters more than the short term. So it's half true, but it's dangerous. Half truths are dangerous. Stay the course. True? Good idea? Sounds good, doesn't it? You think to yourself, you're the captain of a ship and you're staying the course and you're not letting yourself be taken off course. Makes sense, right? Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense if by staying the course you mean staying at the same risk level, which means always changing your allocation as necessary in response to big price changes. Valuation-informed indexing is stay-the-course investing. What John Bogle recommends is sticking at the same stock allocation, which means letting your risk level change wildly over time, which means letting yourself be blown wildly off course. So the slogan does not match the investing strategy put forward. Stay-the-course, in theory, it's wonderful. In implementation by the passive investing advocates, it's a disaster. Buy and hold, good idea. Sounds good. Sounds like you're sticking with your strategy for the long term. You're not flighty. You're sticking to it, which you've got to do. You can't find out whether a strategy works or not in a few years. You've got to stick to it to find anything that works. But if buy and hold means staying at the same stock allocation, that's going to mean there's going to come a time like the time we're in now where you're going to suffer bone-crushing losses. You're going to sell all your stocks at the worst time for doing so. If you had lowered your stock allocation appropriately, you wouldn't be thinking of selling today because you wouldn't have suffered such a hit in the crash. And so you'd be buying today, which is what you should be doing today. The long-term value proposition today is good. That doesn't mean we're not going to have another big crash. We likely are. But the long term, the 10-year return, is good at today's prices. So buy and hold, again, makes sense in theory. The implementation we've heard during the passive investing era, not so good. The very word passive investing, suggests neutrality, doesn't it? Doesn't the word passive suggest, sort of a moderate, prudent, realistic thing to do? Sort of a middle-class thing to do? Passive is the most dangerous strategy imaginable. It's been tried 4 times in the history of the stock market. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the first time. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the second time. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the third time. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the fourth time. And not only that, it brought an economic crisis the first time. It brought an economic crisis the second time. It brought an economic crisis the third time. It brought an economic crisis the fourth time. Why? When stocks are insanely overvalued, people think they have more money than they really do. At the top of the bull market, people thought they had 3 times what they really had. And so people make lots of bad money decisions when they think they own 3 times the wealth than they really do own. So people hurt themselves. They buy cars they can't afford. They go on vacations they can't afford. They buy houses they can't afford. And the price has to return to fair value for the market to continue to function. And when it does that, people are wiped out. And they have to stop buying. And when they stop buying, businesses fail and workers are laid off and the economy goes over a cliff. So we have to stop doing this to ourselves. We have to teach people that valuations affect long-term returns and investing passively is madness. So the word passive should be a red light. When you hear somebody telling you to invest passive, you know, put your hand in your pocket and protect your wallet. That's not the real thing. Dollar cost averaging, bad idea. If you have thoughts you'd like to share with me about other loser investing ideas, please use the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the PassionSaving.com website. I'd love to hear from you. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.